This week on the Borough World Show, we're joined by Andy Budd from Clear Left to discuss running a successful agency and what it means to be successful. This week's show is sponsored by Acquia, the leading provider of cloud platforms for building, delivering and optimising digital experiences. We're also sponsored by FreeAgent, accounting software for small businesses and freelancers, recommended by 99.5% of its users. Welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name is Paul Boag. Joining me, as always, is Marcus. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm very well. We have to speak really fast at double speed, because you remember that Lee then thinks that's how I speak the whole time now, because he listens to the podcast at double speed.
He genuinely thought you were depressed last week.
Because I was talking all right, at
Paul?
Normal
Are you okay?
Speed.
Are you sure? Are you all right?
But as well as us talking at double speed, Mr. Andy Budd needs to speak at double speed as well. Hello, Andy.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
That's unbelievable. He instantly cuts out when he says hello.
No, I'm here. Hi, how are you doing, guys?
Doing really well. We just had this big thing before we started recording. Is everything all right? Is everything working well? I've closed Dropbox. I've done this. We're all ready to go. And then the first thing out of Andy's mouth and it goes wrong. I love it.
Story
Good to have you
life.
On the show, Andy. I've missed you. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has. Well, I've missed the both of you. I've got very fond memories of years gone by sitting outside bars in Austin, sipping beers and talking sort of, you know,
crap.
Smack or crap or whatever. So it's been a while, so we should definitely kind of catch up and, go for a beer and try and relive those times.
Let's just go
well,
to
Austin.
Well,
it's very nice
again.
Of... Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Anywhere hot would do, wouldn't it?
I've just come back from hot, so have you.
Well, that's true.
Anyway, sorry, Andy.
No, I was just going to say, I went to South by Southwest last year, slightly accidentally, as you do, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm not going this year.
Oh, really?
But I was really surprised. It was possibly the best South by Southwest in terms of content I think I'd ever had. And so I kind of got a newfound interest, I think.
Ooh, might be time to have another little visit then.
Well, we gave up, didn't we, because it just got so big. I just didn't go to any of the talks, maybe a handful, and thought it's a long way to go to drink margaritas, although they were particularly nice, if I remember rightly. And to do the Great British Booze Up as well. Wasn't that brilliant?
Indeed.
On the roof.
That was fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. But no, it was, I mean, it's Austin is such a great city. It's a great place to hang out. Going back to South by Southwest these days is a little bit different because there's very few people that I know there anymore. I think a lot of those people have moved on to other events, XOXO and similar. But it was quite nice being kind of just an attendee in a large throng of people, not having any expectations, not, you know, kind of expecting to bump into hundreds of people I knew. And I went to all these really kind of obscure talks around science fiction prototyping and what is happening with the X Prize, Tricorder Prize, which is a prize to try and recreate the sort of the Star Trek tricorder. And just loads of other really random stuff. And it was absolutely delightful. And I saw some of the best, most interesting, diverse talks I'd seen at any conference in the past 3 or 4 years. The downside...
Brilliant.
Is that it's quite expensive to get out there. All the prices have gone up. Hotels are kind of crazy booked. But I'm not going to go this year, but I'm definitely thinking of going next year. So if you guys want to, you know, relive the heady times of 2009, then, yeah, definitely come along.
That's tempting.
Well, you see, I don't know whether I need to. I mean, you know, I'm going to a conference in Brighton soon, and that's just as good, isn't it, Andy? Brighton is just as good as Austin.
Brighton is a lovely town. It's a lovely town. I mean, you know, I've lived here now for 15, 16 years. Not quite as hot, not quite as good a Mexican food. I haven't yet to kind of locate a great sort of tequila bar or margarita server. But otherwise, yeah, it's pretty damn good.
So I'm in my head, this conference that you're putting on, because you're putting on a conference for agency owners, aren't you? A little conference.
I am, yes, I am. But it's not in Brighton.
Oh, is it not?
It's in London.
I didn't pay any attention to where it was.
Clearly.
Oh, that makes my life a lot easier. Oh, that's brilliant.
Oh, perfect. Oh, good. Good. Well, I'm glad we had this podcast.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'd have turned up in Brighton.
Yeah. That could have been awkward.
So, in my head, you're putting that on especially for me.
Yes, I am.
Good. As long as we're clear on that. Just for a chance for us to get together.
I think so. And for Marcus as well. I would love if Marcus could make it as well, because it's been a really long time. And I don't know if you want me to jump into the details of the conference.
Go for it.
Yes, that's why I was. It was a nice.
You were lining
to
me
get
up.
You.
Yeah.
Tell
yeah.
me more, Andy, because okay. I know nothing other than the invitation I got, which is a bit of wood, as you can hear me dropping it on the desk.
It's a coaster. It's not a bit of wood. It's a coaster.
Is the map the on the back straight. Some kind of cryptic clue as to where it's going to be, if that is a map?
It is, yes. All will be revealed shortly.
Okay.
So there it's a
but it's not in Brighton. We know that.
It's not in Brighton. That big wiggly river should give you a pretty good indication. But no, so basically I've spent the last kind of like 10, 11 years running Clear Left. Loved it. I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit more about that in depth later. But one of the things I found is basically, in terms of running a business, I've been making it up as I go along most of the time. I'd never run a business before, definitely never run an agency before. Kind of knew what I didn't like about the other agencies I'd worked at in the past. I knew a lot about what I thought were kind of agency practices that I sort of strongly disagreed with. So that was sort of the motivator for starting Clear Left. But we sort of just kind of bumbled along trying to figure stuff out. And I think, you know, we've been really lucky, probably more luck than skill, if I'm honest. But we've kind of sort of somehow managed to build a company and a brand and a reputation and a set of clients that kind of like what we do. But a lot of the stuff that I've learned along the way has been from other founders like yourselves, you know. And we joke a little bit about sitting in bars drinking, you know, margaritas in Austin. But some of the most kind of like seminal and important moments of my career as an agency owner have happened in those situations. Mm. In fact, I remember sitting down with Tim Malbum from Made by Many at South by Southwest last year in Halcyon Coffee Shop and having an amazing conversation with this really, really smart agency founder that kind of like, you know, I was taking frantic notes and kind of rushed back to the UK and put a whole bunch of things in practice. And there's multiple instances of me doing that. You know, I've done that with you guys. You've been very influential in a lot of my thinking about how to run agencies. And I'm not just saying that to kind of sort of, you know, pull your chain or flatter you, but it's true. And the same with other founders as well. You know, how to structure teams, how to run finances, the kind of facts and figures you need to track, all that kind of stuff. And I guess about sort of 3 or 4 years ago, I started running a series of meetups, a series of dinners in Brighton, which you guys have been invited to. I know it's been difficult to come along because you're not anywhere near Brighton, where I'd sit down, you know, over dinner with agency founders and sort of have some of these conversations. And again, learn more. And it just kind of, you know, realise that that's the best way of growing in our industry is through peer support. So I've organised a little 50-person sort of semi-invite only. So I've invited about 200 agency founders already that I know and love and respect. But there's many more founders out there that I've not met who are doing awesome stuff. So there's a little kind of application form on the website, which is thefoundersassembly.com. And it's happening on the 21st of April in London in a really nice venue. There'll be food, there'll be breakfast, there'll be a little cocktail mixer at the end, and we'll have a big feast afterwards. But mostly it's going to be people like yourself and other agency founders along the way giving their agency stories, running workshops and masterclasses about particular topics that are really important and lots of people maybe aren't quite as good at sort of doing, you know, how to sell, how to pitch, talk you know, talking about value pricing versus sort of day rate pricing, how to, you know, structure the company, how to build the culture of the company, how to maybe even sell the company if that's what you're planning on doing. Or, you know, I think you're going to be touching on what life is like after agencies. And this is just kind of just to help people out, really.
So it sounds like such a good idea. There's something similar in the States, isn't there? There's an owner's summit, which sounds a bit similar to that. But it's really good to have something over here that we can do that kind of thing. I think it's brilliant. Can't wait.
I mean, it's very similar. It's like me and Greg were talking about this idea about 4 years ago about the need for having something like this. I think the direction Greg wanted to do is have smaller events that were very personal and longer, and then a bigger conference. Whereas I wanted to do something that was a bit more mid-sized. The difference between Greg and me is like he then went off and did it, and I spent 3 or 4 years kind of, you know, flapping around and doing other things. So, you know, interesting, we had the idea at the same time, but I'm just a little bit kind of late to the party. But we're trying to do it in our own way. We're trying to put our own spin on it. Try and provide support to this industry. And I think a lot of it comes out of conversations that probably we were all seeing 18 months ago, the death of the agency. You know, I wrote a post about it. I'm sure you guys have had opinions of that as well.
Yeah, I've written about
it. But I don't think the agency is dying.
I've got one waiting in the wings.
Oh, have you really?
Yes, I have. But we've just had a load of new sites go live. So I thought, well, I'll let them take the limelight for a bit, and I'll have my next post, because I write a post about every 2 months, so it can wait. But yes, it is on this subject.
Ah, cool. Yeah, it's a very topical subject at the moment, isn't it? That whole area of, you know, where the future of the agency lies, you know, what kind of work will we be doing in the future, etc. Which segues very nicely into what we're talking about today, really, which is, you know, running a successful agency and what makes, you know, what is success and that kind of thing. Before we do that, I need to apologise if my audio doesn't sound 100% today. It's because I'm out and about, and so I'm using a different mic to normal. So do I sound all right, Marcus? I should have asked you that before we started recording.
You sound fine, Paul. Where are you?
Okay.
Where's Paul?
See, yeah, I'm away, travelling in my motorhome to really... Do you want to know where I am? I'm in Bradford.
Bradford? I thought you were going to say Cornwall or somewhere slightly more romantic.
Even the Yorkshire Dales would have been better, wouldn't it? Mm. But no, I'm right parked in the middle of Bradford at the moment. We've got friends here, and so we're visiting them, and it was easier just to bring the motor home, to be honest. So yeah, not the most exciting trip I've ever done. We've got better ones coming up later in the year, but yeah, that's where we are at the moment. So yes, but I just wanted to mention that in case the audio's a bit rubbish. This is not, you know, what we normally sound like. Let's talk about sponsors very, very quickly. And talking about getting to get-togethers and you know, sitting around dinners, sharing war stories and that kind of thing. Recently, had a lovely lunch with the guys at Acquia. And if you don't know about Acquia, they basically run cloud hosting environments for creating and hosting Drupal websites. So they do some amazing work. And I was listening to their technical director talk about their infrastructure, their hosting infrastructure, and it just blows my mind, that kind of thing that they do. But anyway, so that's for who they are and what they do. And that, I was at one of their lunches that they ran. And where they had a load of existing clients and some other people there as well. And there were a couple of talks from, big name organizations talking about how they've addressed things like digital transformation. And then we had a roundtable discussion about digital transformation. It was just really interesting to hear how other organizations are tackling this kind of problem and you know, the kind of barriers that they face and the things that they've learnt. And yeah, I absolutely love it. Fascinating conversation. So I really appreciate the guys at Acquia inviting me along to that and involving me in that and for supporting the show as well. So we were thinking, what can we do as a sponsor slot on the show that actually is vaguely useful to people. Over the lunch, we wrote between everybody there, the Acquia people, myself and the various clients, we wrote a list of top tips for digital transformation. If you're involved in trying to realign your organization to be a little bit more focused on the needs of kind of today's connected users, and you want to do whatever this thing digital transformation is, and none of us could agree on what that is, some of the advice that they gave you was really good. So here's a quick rundown of five very good tips to bear in mind. One, shown, don't tell, right? Prototyping, build proof of concept sites, you know, actually don't write long specification documents, don't have endless debates about stuff, but actually build it and try it. Try creating something small, agile, and put it in front of real users, monitor what their experiences are. That was a huge thing. And they said, everybody there agreed that that made a big difference in getting things to actually happen rather than endless discussions. Second thing that they shared was to be an educator and not an implementer, or not just an implementer. So, the digital teams in these companies are spending an increasing amount of time just educating colleagues about what digital is capable of, what users' needs are these days, how user behavior has changed, all of those kinds of things. So having a kind of internal comms strategy and training in place was a huge thing that came out. Getting common agreement of what digital actually means. Because it's such a woolly statement, a lot of organizations, a lot of people in organizations don't really understand, you know, what digital incorporates, what it doesn't incorporate, what terms like a digital team or digital transformation or digital strategy, what do all these things actually mean? So there's a lot of work and discussion that needs to go on around that within organizations to get everybody moving in the same direction. Talking the same direction, there's a lot of talk about governance and putting together kind of governance, especially around things like social media, managing content, what gets built and what doesn't, so that you don't just end up building, you know, whatever some senior person decides that you should have today. You know, the typical, well, my nephew uses mobile apps, so we have to have a mobile app. That's what the cool kids want. You know, having better governance and processes around that stuff. And then all the time exposing users exposing colleagues to users' needs, and, you know, showing them highlight reels and taking them to usability testing and having customer journey maps and empathy maps and all that kind of stuff, so that people are constantly exposed to the needs of users. So it's a really good lunch, very, very smart people around the table, and I was really impressed at the Acquia team as well. So you can learn more about Acquia by going to boagworld.com/Acquia, ACQUIA. Check them out. Cool. So, Andy, The reason that we got you on the show is we're doing a season where we're focusing very much on, three things: passion, motivation, and success, and the relationship between those things. And, you know, what it means to be, you know, do we all need to be kind of have the Silicon Valley startup mentality of, you know, in order to be successful? What does it mean to be successful? That kind of thing. So we thought we'd get you on the show really to talk about the agency side of things, and a little bit about your experiences of running an agency and what it means to be running a successful agency. So the first question I wanted to ask you really was around the setting up of Clear Left. Okay, so when did you guys set up?
We started in around May 2005. So we're sort of about 11 and a half years old now, I guess. We celebrated our sort of 10th birthday last year. So, yeah.
Cool. So on that basis, when you set it up, you know, did you actually have a vision of what you wanted to become or what you wanted to achieve? Or was it, should we give this a go, guys, and let's see what happens?
I don't know whether at the moment of inception, at the moment that we had the idea, that we had already had this sort of really well-formed picture on our heads of where we wanted Clear Left to go. But I do remember when we started, never having started a business before, we thought, well, maybe we should write a business plan. That seems like the kind of thing people talk about. frankly, these days, nobody ever writes a business plan, but, you know, we did. And we looked at the business plan 5 years later because we'd sort of mapped out 5 years of revenue and growth and the number of people we thought we had. And 5 years later, we were bang on.
Really?
Yeah, and we hadn't opened that document, like, in between. So it just happened that we were kind of working at that pace. And I guess sort of like, you know, 5 years on from that, where we thought the company would be, pretty much is where the company would be. So obviously there's some kind of internal tacit understanding of where we want to be, what we want to do, what we're trying to achieve. But it's not been sort of written down in some kind of like huge mission statement kind of, you know, we're going to rule the world kind of thing. But yeah, I think we're on track doing what we're doing. Yeah, very well.
So you from very early on, you knew that you wanted to grow the business in terms of number of employees. You had an idea of the kind of clients that you wanted to win, that kind of thing.
I would say, well, to a certain extent, yes. But I would prefix that with what we knew from a really early stage is the impact we wanted to have on the design community and the design world.
Okay.
We started because we were frustrated by the poor level of service that other agencies were delivering. We were frustrated by the lack of detail that was paid to solving those clients' needs. You know, people back in the day would just jump into Photoshop and start moving things around the screen and it was all pretty pictures. And at the stage, we felt very against that. We wanted to understand the user needs and the context of use and the business requirements and do all these kind of things. And very few people were doing that. So we set out to kind of try and deliver digital services in a more modern, user-friendly, kind of scientific way. I think also we were sort of frustrated slightly by maybe some of the sort of the narrow-mindedness of designers back in, you know, back in the sort of the early noughties. You know, it was very, the kind of state of the art back then was lots of blink tags and marquees and frame sets and very inaccessible, very poor code quality. And so we started as craftsmen, really. We wanted to create beautifully crafted, well-considered digital experiences. And if we had only done that for ourselves, you know, and if we'd only done that for our clients, then we would have, you know, jumped forward 10 years and we would have probably developed 20, 30, 40, 50 sites and that's it. But by wanting to share our knowledge through our books, through our writing, through our talks, we hope to kind of have an impact on the wider community and professionalise design. And I think that's the thing that still drives us. I think we really want, you know, we love the industry. You know, I know that you've sort of, you've slightly veered off the passion thing almost as soon as you started talking about it in episode one. It seems like you kind of like, you know, it seems like you're maybe regretting having that as the kind of the driving force. But I would say that as a company, we are genuinely passionate, or at least I am genuinely passionate about the industry I work in, the people that surround me, because it's such a fantastically talented, positive, open-minded group of individuals, not just at Clear Left, but who work on the web. And that's not the same as a lot of industries. You know, I think we can have this sort of blinkered view of our surroundings. We look at all of our colleagues and we think, well, these are really nice people in a really nice, mature industry. But you look at other companies where people check in and check out into grey, drab rooms where they don't feel part of the process, where they're doing a job that they don't fully understand, and basically they're just working to make ends meet. And it's not their fault, and a lot of people have to do that. So I think we're incredibly privileged, very privileged, often if you look at Silicon Valley, overprivileged to what we do. But I want to accept that. I want to kind of be thankful of where I am in the industry and what I've been able to achieve, and hopefully allow everybody else within the industry to have something like nearing that, approximating that. And so yeah, I'm genuinely excited by helping other people do amazing stuff.
See, now that's really interesting, because all right, how to word this?
Word it however you want.
Word it without me looking like, sounding like a miserable git rather than it reflecting badly on you. But I felt like that for a long time, but I feel like I've lost that a little bit, right? That over the years, I've become a little bit jaded in my attitude towards us as an industry. I feel I've caught myself calling them an industry when I used to call it a community. Mm-hmm. I felt that it's been more of a battle these days. I felt, to be honest, a little bit, and we've joked about this before, Andy, about how we're both over the hill a little bit, and you know, there's all these young talented people that are doing their things.
Speak
anymore.
Speak for yourself, man. Speak for yourself.
You said, and I remember, you referred to yourself as a fading star at once.
Like a supernova, you mean, kind of.
Yeah. Fading very slowly, yeah.
So my kind of, the point I'm kind of making there is, how have you managed to keep that level of enthusiasm and excitement about the industry?
I mean, it kind of ebbs and it flows, and it kind of comes and it wanes, I guess.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, I think I do. So I think some of your listeners might kind of know me more from maybe my Twitter persona rather than having met me in person or seen me speak. And I can sometimes be a little bit grumpy and argumentative online. But that is usually driven by a real deep caring for the industry and passion for the industry. And so when I find myself kind of in arguments with people online, it's because I actually generally, you know, have put a lot of effort into this community. I really care about it, and I want us all to succeed, and I think we can succeed by doing great work. And so but there are moments of time when I think, you know, why am I bothering? What's the point? You know, is it worth trying, you know, having another big conversation about the professionalism of the industry or craft, etc., etc.? And I also think over the years, you know, I come across more and more people who are getting jaded, and there's nothing wrong with being jaded. I mean, you know, just because you do this job doesn't mean you have to live it. Some people do, and that's great. Others don't. You know, it is a job and a profession and a life and a calling, and it can be all of those things or just one of them. But I know. I mean, I guess I'm still enjoying what I do. I'm still meeting interesting people. I'm still learning. And as long as that carries on, I want to take those learnings. I want to apply them. The learnings have changed. You know, when I started, the learnings were, oh, wow, I've learned how to change the colour of an underline. I must share it with people.
Yeah.
You know, 15 years on, now my learnings are, wow, well, how can we help make businesses better? And I'm doing that through the conference we talked about earlier to try and help design businesses be better. I'm also doing that through a lot of the work we do at Clear Left with a digital sort of change, you know, some of the stuff that you talked about earlier. And I think, you know, there's always opportunities for improvement. And I think the challenge of the designer is that they surround themselves wherever they look with things that are broken. You know, you notice the problems around you. Now, the great thing about designers is we have the ability to fix those problems. And I think as long as you're fixing more things than you're breaking or noticing, then you can sort of maintain positive. I think if it starts to get overwhelming and you're seeing that it's just impossible for you to fix everything and no one else is kind of trying to help you out, then I can definitely see how that would kind of weigh. And, you know, who knows? You know, who knows where I'll be in 5 or 10 years? My attitude might have changed. You know, I'm definitely not speaking anywhere near as much as I used to and doing those other things because I'm doing a lot with our clients and with the company. But, you know, it kind of ebbs and flows.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Absolutely. And there is something very, you know, I really enjoyed the kind of the sharing and the teaching and, you know, all of that side of things. I think sometimes I find the passion of the... Sometimes the passion's a two-edged sword, isn't it? Because, you know, on one half, you know, it's really great that there's a passionate community, but it does mean that people can get... can become irritating sometimes as well. Do you know what I mean? And that, I think, has tired me on occasions.
Yeah.
But no, it's really, I mean, I find that really encouraging that you're still at that place, that you're still fired up about what you do. Because when you've been doing something as long as you have, I know the job has changed because the industry's changed, but that's a, you know, it's a big commitment. I mean, had you ever stayed in one job that length of time before Clear Left?
No, not at all. So no. Yeah, I mean, this is a 15, 16, 20 year career for me at the moment.
I'm probably
too old to kind of switch careers. But yeah, I still think there's opportunities. I guess the thing that motivates me ultimately is seeing potential. You know, whether it's potential in an individual, whether it's potential in a client project, You know, and if you can help unlock that potential, if you can be party to unlocking that potential, it's a wonderful feeling. And you do that with your education. You see amazing people and you open their eyes and you unlock the talents that lie within. So,
So, I mean, from your point of view, because, I mean, people would look at Clear Left, and Clear Left is generally considered to be a successful agency, an agency that has worked well. Does it feel successful in your eyes? And if so, what makes it successful? What is it about it that you go, yeah, I'm proud of that. That's the, you know, that's the core of its success.
Mm-hmm. It's a really, really tricky question, because I guess success means lots of different things. I mean, we're a successful agency in the sense that we have been around for 10, 11 years and are financially sort of successful. You know, we're not going to retire anytime soon. You know, there's no sort of life on the open road sort of immediately ahead of me. But you know, we're a stable business. We have lots of clients that appreciate our input and effort. We've got a team of people that, you know, largely enjoy working with us and do really, really good work. So I think we're successful in that sense. I feel that I've got a duty of care as the founder of a company to all the people that I employ, and I want to make them feel happy and successful. And so you know, my job is to feed them great work and great business and help them pay their bills and keep their company and their lifestyle kind of, you know, the house and all that kind of stuff going. So I think you can measure the success of the company through the people that we employ and their happiness, or the output that we do, the quality of the work. I think some people judge success around awards. We've won a few of those, but that's not something that we really put much truck in. I think as a company and as individuals, we're more motivated by intrinsic validation rather than extrinsic. You know, it's I feel much happier sitting down at the end of the day, having had a great week, chatting to a couple of good friends on a podcast, drinking a pint of beer left beer, and enjoying, you know, what we've been able to do over the week, than necessarily being told that we've won an award or some other such thing. So I think the validation comes internally rather than externally. But I think, again, like, you know, it goes back to what the purpose is, I think, of you starting something. If you start a business to have a lifestyle, and you manage to live that lifestyle, then you've run a successful business. If you start a business because you want to make an exit in 5 years' time and become a millionaire, and you achieve that, then your business is successful. I think for Clear Left, we, as I said earlier, we wanted to have an impact on the design world. And I think the books we've written and the conferences we've created, and when I come across people, you know, a lot of people that employ Clear Left now, you know, when we go in and we meet them, it turns out that they've been following us for years and they've read my book and they've been to our conferences, and now 10 years on, they have a career as a head of UX or head of design in a really, really great company. And, you know, and we're party to the success of their career. And they're now really excited to have the opportunity to come and involve us in their story in a bigger way. And so it's these small instances, these meeting people, these conversations that makes me happy and carry on. And I think if that stopped, I think if I stopped meeting people that found use from the things we talk about, where it was all like really painful to sell work, where people didn't value you, then maybe I'd think twice. But that, at the moment, seems no sign of abating. In fact, quite the opposite. At the moment at Clear Left, we're struggling just to kind of fill all the orders that we currently have. You know, it's kind of, things have exploded in the start of the year, and we've got loads of work and we've got loads of open job offers and things seem to be really good. So, but yeah, you know, things can turn on a dime in the agency world, so who knows?
Yeah,
it's interesting. Go on, Marcus. No, you're probably going to say what I was going to say anyway.
No, I was just going to go back to this idea of, you know, what does success mean? Sort of bring my feelings on that to the table. And it does definitely relate to this idea of the dangers of planning too far in the future, because we did, I mean, we weren't kind of, you know, we did some planning. We didn't kind of, you know, go at it every week thinking, where are we going to be in the following week, or, you know, what's our 5-year, 10-year plan, all that kind of thing. But we did do it. And I think the problem with it is, because you're sitting down to to make plans, you feel a need to do something different. That's, oh, well, we should be developing a product or something like that, or we should be growing, or we should be making more money. And I think what that ended up happening with Headscape is that we got too big, and we ended up in a situation where, even though we had more people and we were making more money, etc., it didn't feel as successful as it does now when we're back to being a smaller team and doing the things that we know we're good at. And we don't spend a lot of time now thinking, oh, you know, where should we be in a year or 5 years? We're just sort of getting on with it and enjoying it. But that goes back to
what Andy said, I think, of success is what you define it at the almost at the beginning. You know, the beginning of Headscape. Well, Clear Left, you know, one of the things that they wanted to do was put a dent in the design world, which is great, and they've very much achieved that.
Absolutely.
With Headscape, it was very much, you know, we want to build a lifestyle business, you know, that facilitates the things that we want to do outside of, you know, our outside of our work life, etc. And it's not saying we didn't want to have an impact on the design industry, and I'm sure Clear Left also wanted nice life, but you know, you kind of define your road at the beginning, and I think for us, that's why growing to 20 plus people didn't make sense, because it started to undermine that founding principle of building a lifestyle business. While with someone like Clear Left, if they're, you know, almost their growth is a key component in their ability to influence, you know, and shape the design industry. Would you say that's fair enough, Andy?
I think that's spot on, absolutely.
Yeah. Because I think for me, that's a, you know, because obviously when I started, when I left, you know, Headscape, I had to decide what it is that I wanted. And for me, it was that I liked and wanted to maintain the lifestyle elements that attracted me to Headscape. But a big thing that I wanted to do is more teaching and education and mentoring and that kind of stuff, which Headscape wasn't, you know, as good a fit for. And so, you know, that's kind of influenced my direction. And it's really interesting with the mentorship, the people that I mentor, the ones that run other agencies, you know, the first thing I always say to them is, you know, what is success look like to you? What is, you know, your definition of where you want to take this organization in terms of what you want to get out of it? And I think unless you know that, it's very hard to go anywhere else and design the shape of it.
I think the other thing that's really interesting, there's two things. I think first off, I think everything you said is absolutely right. I think first off though, your vision of success changes as you grow as a human being. So
that's true. Yeah.
What you think 10 years ago when you start an agency might be very different from what you feel now.
Yeah.
And if you can make the goals of that agency morph around how you have changed as an individual, then that's great. If you can't, then it comes to a point where you need to kind of align your lifestyle with what you're wanting to get out of it. I think for me, I think the fundamental, you know, I find a lot of satisfaction as a founder vicariously. So I get a lot of enjoyment. Often, as a founder, I'm giving up my own personal preferences in favor of the preferences of others. You know, so but I like that. I like the ability to see other people prosper. I like the ability to, you know, make other people great. And you know, and so it's very rarely about me, you know, with what I do. It's always about kind of tend to be supporting other people. And so, of course, the direction my career is going to go in is very much going to be around groups of people and that kind of stuff. But it's perfectly valid to have your goals based on how you want to feel or how you behave or believe. You know, some people gain validation by having a great car. And that's great. And if you want to own a Tesla, and if driving a Tesla and feeling the leather and having all this stuff makes you feel good, and you understand that that's what, you know, that's what the mechanism is, then go for it. So I think as long as you're following your own path, as long as you realise that path changes and you can adapt to that, I don't think you need to gain validation externally, unless, of course, weirdly, that's what you enjoy doing. So, I'm very Buddhist or Taoist about this whole stuff. You know, there's no right way or wrong way of doing things. It's very individual and.
Yeah, you know, personally, which for me, I just love having my finger in all the pies of what we're doing, and, you know, a bit like you, what you were saying there, Andy, watching everybody just do great work and enjoy working as part of our team. That's enough for me, definitely.
Mm. But it is interesting with both of you two. You know, you both have to deal with a lot of what would be considered the crap of dealing with an agency. You know, both of you have to deal with some of those awkward client conversations. Both of you have to deal with, you know, winning the work in the first place. Both of you have, a kind of those more complex elements of running an agency. And especially for you, Andy, you know, you used to be a hands-on designer and coder, you know. And have you found that a comfortable transition away from that?
I have, but again, it kind of goes back to the idea that, you know, I'm happier when the people around me are happier. And so if I have to sacrifice something that I like to make other people happy, then I kind of, that's sort of my natural tendency. So, you know, it's not all about me. But there's some agencies where it's all about the founder, and the founder can't hire anyone that's better than them at design or better than them at development. And if they do, then they kind of have this big ego problem and they throw strops and what have you. I've always been the other way around. I've always wanted to hire people smarter than me. So I always you know, that I'm the stupidest person in the company. I mean, I am. I know the least about everything amongst everybody. But that's great, because I think, you know, that's a good attitude. Why pretend to be great at everything when you're not? But yeah, you know, it's horses for courses, I think.
It's like that comment that was made in the Steve Jobs movie about, you know, you play the orchestra. That, you know, everybody in the company is, you know, are experts in their instrument and do this beautiful thing, and you just bring them together and get them working as a team. And I liked that analogy. It stuck with me for some reason.
I mean, you know, the modern society is built on the idea that you can achieve more as a group of you know, connected and coordinated individuals than you can do singularly. So if you want to have an impact, if you want to do great work, you're always going to do better work, I would argue, you know, as a team, as a collective, as a group, rather than as a kind of an individual. And this is why I kind of sometimes get a little bit kind of annoyed by some of the discussion around, well, I'm a designer and I should be able to do everything and don't box me in. Well, you can, but there's very few true auteurs out there. And, you know, these days, if you look at how, you know, movies are not made by an individual person doing everything. They're made by very, very complex processes and large groups of people that have specialisms and can do great work. So that's not to say that you can't be a fully validated person making small films with just you and a camera. So it's just that, you know, there's a tendency for it to get better.
So, I mean, Andy, have you ever had moments, well, you must have had moments where you were just like, I am fed up with this, I want to walk away from it. And what kept you going in those kinds of moments? Because running an agency can be pretty tough sometimes.
It can be. And I think if you're running an agency, there's very few other people that kind of understand the pressure you're under, apart from other agency founders, which, again, is why we're kind of doing this sort of agency conference. But yeah, I mean, you know, there are plenty of times that's happened. I come from a working class background. I don't come from a particularly privileged background. I realise that there are lots of people out there that have really crappy jobs. And so it's kind of a little bit stupid for me to complain. Ultimately, you know, I'm not working down a mine. I'm not, you know, sitting on a checkout. Not that there's anything wrong with any of those jobs, but, you know, I have an incredibly privileged life that sees me flying around the world speaking at conferences, that sees me using a beautiful computer in a nice office and working with really good people. So I think just kind of like a bit of a reality check, really, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm kind of lucky, you know, like I have family members that are actually real human beings that aren't web designers.
that always,
you know,
helps.
You know, I've got a brother that fits garage doors for a living. And I've got a brother that works in the NHS mental health kind of field. So by comparison, you know, I didn't really have an awful lot to complain about because I had a hard day, you know, with a client, or, you know, a stressful conversation with a colleague, or, you know, too many emails. You know, it's kind of a little bit pathetic, really. And I kind of get a little bit annoyed by too much kind of sort of self sort of centered bleating, really. You know,
I know what you mean. It you know, I talk to my friends, meet at the pub or whatever, and they've had a hard day, and I listen to what they've had to go through with difficult bosses and that kind of thing, and I think, well, probably I have a really tough phone call or something like that once or twice a year. Most of the time, it's fine, you know. And yes, we are very privileged, and I think we're all aware of that, and we don't moan about it. Well, I don't, anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if that's true. I mean, I think in the agency world we don't, but I think there is. I think there is a level of expectation that is happening in this industry. I mean, I remember, you know, quite vividly sort of sat in California, in San Francisco, in a coffee shop next to a couple who were there with their parents. And they were complaining that the startup that they worked at had banned pizza on Fridays as a health kick. And they were so incensed that they were going to leave that startup and join another startup because that other startup had started offering pizza in order to attract their staff away. And I'm like, hold on, you're probably on a $200,000 job and you're complaining about the hardships of not getting pizza on a Friday. You're probably getting free Uber travel. You're probably having your laundry done for you. You're 23. Come on, you know, let's get real here. So, you know, every time that I kind of start sort of like having a bit of a hissy fit and checking myself, I think back to some of these sort of super overprivileged people, like, no, actually, got a pretty decent life here.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've talked about this a little bit already, Andy, but you've kind of touched on the area of planning and business plans and that kind of stuff. Do you do much in the way of that still? You talked about how you did it in the early days. What? How do you kind of keep Clear Left on course?
I mean, it's just usual kind of good business stuff. I mean, we've got a pipeline of work which we track, probably less professionally than we probably should, but we've got an idea of the work that's coming in, the potential of closing those projects, etc., etc. So there's a pipeline. We've got a fairly good understanding of what people owe us, so we've got a cash flow. We know when invoices are going to land, etc., etc. So, you know, we can plan a little bit in advance. But the reality is that the agency business is kind of, you know, really only, you can only sort of properly plan about 3 months ahead. You don't really know what's coming around the corner. It's not like a product business where you know roughly what the kind of the sales are going to be like, and you can have pre-orders and all that kind of stuff. So there's a little bit of planning, but, you know, not really. I mean, I think our process has always been just to kind of do good work, and, you know, hopefully people will appreciate that and come and you know, use our skills. I mean, obviously, we, you know, there's strategy that we do around who we're going to hire and how we're going to hire and the kind of work that we're going to go for, and you know, there's all that kind of sort of, you know, planning stuff. But you know, I think we're not a very you know, we're designers first and we're business people second, and so we're driven by the work and we sort of have to do the business stuff rather than, you know, being a business company first and design a second. But there are lots of companies like that. I know lots of companies that have set up to make money, to grow to 60 people, you know, to sell in 3-5 years, and everything about their company is organized and optimized around doing that. If that's what you want to do, that's great. But for us, that's not how we approach things.
Yeah. So I was going to say, Paul, that I used to stress about the 3 month cliff, but I've just accepted it now. It's just the way it is. I also think that obviously the longer you're around, and I've said this before, but the longer you're around, assuming you're doing good work, the more people get to hear about you and get to see your work. So you're more likely to get more work coming through the door, which seems to be the case at the moment. It says touching wood. Yeah. We're exactly the same. I'm not sure about the validity of setting up a business just to sell it. It's fine, I guess, but I wonder what people get out of that, especially during that period when they're doing it. What do you get out of it? Aren't you wasting your life?
Several million pounds.
Well, if it works, if it works, yeah.
But then it's a type of gambling, isn't it?
Yeah,
essentially, and also I think people get the satisfaction of building something. You know, there are some people that are kind of serial entrepreneurs. They enjoy the act of building it, but not running and maintaining it. And I can understand that. I probably, you know, there's a little bit of that in me, that it's, I get bored after a certain length of time, and you know, well, you know, you had to work with me for long enough, you know, you had to dangle something new and shiny in front of my face every 18 months to keep me interested.
Yeah, that's given me a horrendous picture in my mind now.
Brilliant. Paul used to come up with harebrained schemes about annually, and Chris and I would sigh and go, okay, Paul, off you go. Do whatever it is you need to do.
Mm. I mean, I'm the same. I mean, you know, I'm always coming up with kind of ideas, conferences, products, etc., etc. So, yeah, you know, there is a desire, there's a drive to kind of do new, interesting stuff. But kind of, sorry, backtracking a second, I think going back to one of your early questions about what advice I would give, I think the best advice is just to kind of try and build up a bit of a war chest, you know. You don't have to worry so much around really, really detailed financial planning if you have somewhere between 4 and 6 months worth of money in the bank.
Yeah.
And if you have that, if you have a couple of dry months, if things dry up, then you're not going to be panicking. You're not going to be making decisions based out of fear rather than based out of comfort. I think where agencies go wrong and where the quality starts to suffer is where they start making compromises because they have to, because quite often because the founders have just bled the company dry. I see lots of companies that kind of, you know, are lifestyle businesses and basically take every single penny of spare cash out of the organization because they want to fund their lifestyle, their car driving, their holidays. And then the moment there's a road bump, they kind of go bust. Whereas if you're in it for the long haul, you want to invest all of your money or the bulk of your money back into the company. You want to have it in the bank. You want to have a cash reserve. So if things go a bit wobbly, you're relatively safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good advice, that one.
I mean, I remember...
God bless Chris Scott.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I'm now having to learn this kind of, you know, financial restraint. If it wasn't for my wife, it would not be such a pretty picture, I don't think. Sorry, you were going to say, Andy?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I remember a while ago, an agency founder who will remain nameless, who sacked a couple of his staff because they were going through hard times at the same time that they bought a brand new Audi car.
Oh, yeah.
And that just kind of like struck me as a kind of, you know, indicator of a lack of concern. You know, you're buying a 20, 30, 40,000 pound car at the same time as you're letting a couple of people go. If anything, I think as a founder, when times are hard, you're the one that should really kind of, you know, suffer first, and you've got a duty of care to your team. So, you know, I think it depends on your motivations. But to kind of answer to the Marcus's point, I do, you know, I think it's perfectly valid. You know, if you want to build a business to sell it, you know, if your goal is to create value in an organization that someone else can unlock, and you can step away from that deal with a, you know, £1 million or £2 million to go on and do the thing you want to do, then absolutely. Like, you know, if you've dreamed all your life of surfing big waves around the world, or you want to give up, you know, agency life and become a potter, the only way you can do that probably is to grow it, to sell it, to flip it, to move on. And that's fine. It's just not what I value. It's definitely not what you guys value, but it's perfectly valid for somebody else. I do think it's a bit of a shame sometimes. I do think some agencies are run almost like a door-to-door salesman company, you know. They don't care what they're selling. It could be windows, it could be anything. You know, the business is the thing that drives you, but that's definitely not where we are, so.
No. Mm. Do you ever imagine life after Clear Left?
I don't know if I can, really. I think I'm institutionalised. you know, I mean, probably much like Marcus, I don't know what that would be. I mean, I could imagine possible scenarios. There are plenty of agency founders that have gone on to work with big tech companies. I know, you know, part of the whole agency world is over kind of scenario has happened through companies like Tihan Lax going and working with, you know, Facebook, or other companies going and working with Google, and you know, that's definitely a common route. Another route is to kind of build it up and sell it to a bigger company and take the money and run. The third route is obviously clearly what you've done. And I think you've done a fantastic job of building your own brand and your own consultancy out of what you have. You know, I said to you via email a couple of weeks ago, actually, I really admire what you're doing at the moment. I think you're probably one of the most successful consultants in this space that I know, looking at your website. You've really thought about how all of these different revenue streams, you know, portfolio, career stuff kind of fits together. And you're delivering wonderful advice and knowledge and expertise to you know, loads of other companies. So there's
I like having you on the show, Andy.
You can stop me, Andy.
no, I don't get any, we don't get enough guests being nice to me. You corrupt them all, Marcus. It's good.
But also, you know, but I genuinely say this. I mean, I think also, like, you know, Marcus is, you know, is doing great work and keeping the agency going. And I think, you know, there's, you know, you can do all of these things. I don't, you know, just go your own path, I guess.
Yeah, and well, actually, that's a perfect thing to stop on. You know, you know, you've got to follow your own bliss. We've turned very hippie-ish towards the end of it, but it's kind of true, really. You know, you've got to decide. I think the biggest thing that I think a lot of people are bad at is deciding what they really want. What is it that they actually want out of life? And I think a lot of people don't take the time to stop and think that through. But, you know, that's the wonderful thing about the world we live in now, that, you know, you can do what your passion is. You can do what you enjoy as for a job. You know, the means of production, the means of distribution, the means of communication, they're all in your hands these days in a way that they weren't in the past. And that provides amazing opportunities. So
I would agree. But also I would say that the world doesn't owe you a living, and the world doesn't owe you the ability to do everything you want as well. So I think there is a corollary to that. There's an opposite to that, which is also you kind of need to sometimes suck up and do the crap work. You know, you can't, you know, not everyone is in a position to do amazing stuff. And I do sometimes get frustrated. I see a lot of organizations that are kind of selling this sort of nirvana, that because my life is perfect, everyone's life could be perfect. And while on the surface that feels like a lovely, positive, hippie-ish kind of vibe to give, hey guys, we can all just do whatever we want, the reality is that what you're often doing is you're often setting up expectations which are very difficult to follow.
Yeah.
And I kind of don't like this kind of sort of slightly right-wing kind of libertarian idea that, like, you know, all you have to do is work really hard and seize the opportunities and life will be good to you. There are amazing people that were born in crappy circumstances. There are really, really mediocre people that have been born in amazing circumstances. There's whole ranges of people that kind of find themselves in between. So it's not like follow your dreams or follow your bliss. I think it's just about, you know, being a good person and try and optimize where you are at the moment. But accept the fact that, you know, you're... Again, I think there's this element of accepting who you are and not necessarily always trying to attain something which is unattainable. And, you know, not wanting to be too hippie, but, you know, this is definitely a kind of Buddhist sort of Taoist principle, you know, about acceptance. And I think a lot of people in today's society, and in particular a lot of younger people, are unsatisfied because what they believe success looks like, they believe they have a right to it, but it's unattainable. You know, people want to be amazing boy band kind of rock stars, but aren't willing to put the time into learn instruments and be able to sing and, you know, deal with A&R people and stuff. They want to kind of walk onto stage and have a immediate fame. And actually, success involves a lot of hardship and it involves a lot of failure. And you can't have this beautiful, blissful life. You have to accept some of that to be successful.
That's a whole other podcast, so I'm not even going to go down that route. But yeah, watching my kids go through that kind of, particularly when they were kind of mid-teens, and this expectation or this feeling that they, you know, all these things would come to them, and this was not just them, you know, the whole generation, it seemed, or certainly all of their friends had that, and it was a, they all came down with a really hard bump when they realised that life isn't really like that. But that's a very long conversation, and maybe one we should have on another podcast. I know we're coming to the end,
or in the pub.
In the pub, yeah, yes, wasn't
it? It's a
idea.
Definite. It sounds to me like a grumpy old man conversation in the pub. That's what that sounds like, I have to say. But very good and very true advice nonetheless. Right, let's quickly talk about our final sponsor before we wrap up this week's show. It is, of course, Free Agent that have been supporting us all throughout the show, throughout this season so far. Can't say enough things about Free Agent. I live and breathe them all the time. Last week I talked about how great their invoicing was and how easy and painless that makes it. This week I want to mention how they handle bank transactions. Because obviously that's a huge part of running a business is you know, bank transactions. It's a big part of your accounting. It's a big part of your VAT, your tax, all the rest of it. Basically, you can automatically connect almost any bank account with Free Agent, and it will just suck in those transactions. So they just appear within your Free Agent account overnight. And I, you know, I've personally connected PayPal, I've connected Barclays. It's just so easy to set up, so seamless. They support loads of other banks as well. And essentially what it does is it highlights all the transactions that you need to go through and identify and categorize them. It's really, really simple to do. It flags them in red so you know that you've got to do it. You go through, you say, oh, this was me buying another shiny iPad that was essential for my work business, and you attach the receipt and you're kind of done. And it'll even guess at reoccurring transactions, so it'll kind of automatically categorize stuff for you if it thinks it recognizes them. You just attach your receipts to the whole thing, and then your accountant has everything they need in order to do your accounts at the end of the year, or you or whoever is going to do it. And you can even do the whole process on a mobile app, which is pretty useful. And once all that data's in, once all of that stuff has been categorized, then at a glance you've got all these different reports that give you a breakdown of your business and how your spending's going, how your cash flow is, all the rest of it. So check out Free Agent. Give them a go yourself at boagworld.com/freeagent. Marcus, do you have a joke for us?
I do. A very short joke this week.
You say that every week. You know that, Marcus,
well,
right?
This is only 8 words. There you go.
Oh, cool. That is very short.
Statistically, 6 out of 7 dwarves are not happy.
Oh, that's sad. That's not funny. That's really sad.
You anyway. Do get it, though, don't you, Paul?
Yeah.
That's all right, then.
Understand it.
So, therefore, it isn't particularly sad, is it?
Well, it is. I think they should all be happy. I like people to be happy. Like Andy. He likes his employees to be happy. I like
Andy's gone
to be
silent.
Happy.
It was the joke was so bad. They're always bad, Andy. You know that.
No comment.
Yeah. All right, Andy, thank you so much for joining us on this week's show. It's really been really good to have you. And I can't wait to meet up in London soon.
It's going to be awesome.
Cool. Next week, we have Molly Holschlag joining us, which is really exciting. She's been out of the scene for quite a while because she's been battling some really serious illnesses. And we're going to get her on the show and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about her experiences of being ill and how that's impacted her career. You know, Molly used to be, I'm sure still is, such an enthusiastic advocate for web design best practice. But because of her illness, she hasn't been able to do a lot. And I think that's a really interesting subject to explore about overcoming the kind of barriers that are put in our way sometimes. So join us next week to hear from Molly. But until then, thanks for listening. Bye.